Hey, it's Scott MacArthur, co-host of Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac. If you're hearing this, please follow the link in the show description to subscribe to our new feed for more great sports talk and interviews from Ashley Docking, Mike Zigomanis, and me.
Get an extra-large two-topping pizza for only $11.99. That's an extra-large two-topping pizza for only $11.99. So remember, get for only at Pizza Pizza.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead Off with Ashley.
Here's the deal. Everyone loves her, and right. She's so professional.
Ziggy.
Eggs for lunch? That's weird.
It's not weird. You're weird. Your girlfriend looks like mom.
And Scotty Mack.
I have these notes, but I gotta say, I'm just fired up to be here today. It's pretty cool.
Ah! Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's Lead Off on your Tuesday morning. Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. To check and see if Ashley actually left the building. And you have been on the radio endlessly.
The only person working harder than me yesterday was Huberl. I can tell you that.
At Leafs practice.
At Leafs practice, yeah. Turning back the hands of reporter time, baby. I was like, I didn't know he was going, and then I saw him on Twitter, and it was like, update, this is what this person said. I was like, what is going on? Okay, Hugh, coming in with the heat.
Yeah, I got a chirp yesterday from Hugh on Twitter, so I liked it. That was bringing back some old memories at the practice rink.
He shot you a chirp?
Yeah, he did.
Was he one of the ones who would sidle you at your locker?
There's certain media people that you would know you could joke around with, and some you wouldn't. Just from, you might review an article, or you might have a friend that would say, hey, this guy's, you know, saying this about you, and you got to be careful around them, right? Because you never know when they're going to come at you. So yeah, some people you can kind of joke around with, but some you can't.
So you just,
Hugh was someone that you liked or someone you avoided, just for the record, because I'm still not too sure which one he falls into. Did he write a scathing review?
Huey? What's that?
Did he do a scathing report on TV?
No. What are you talking about?
Hugh.
Hugh Burrow.
Hugh. No, it's I don't remember Hugh back.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, no.
I don't remember Hugh in the. Well, I wasn't there long, guys. Come on.
Amongst a plethora of writers or TV personalities who probably look a little bit similar-ish, not to be disrespectful, but full facts. You don't remember a...
Here we go. I knew it.
You don't remember a burly bald man coming to accost you by your locker?
I was only there, a couple months?
We're getting a full flannel attack right now.
Were you?
Was he?
Because I don't remember you either, he says.
So he was like, where's Mike Zigomanis? And I'm like, I think I was on the... So I replied on Twitter. I was saying... I was spent more time on the treatment table than on the ice.
That's not true.
But I don't.
Honestly, that sounds nice.
Yeah,
but
it
I don't
really
think,
does, doesn't it?
You know, I didn't. Not a lot of people would come around and talk to me, so I didn't get a chance to maybe meet everybody and know them the way I should.
After the show yesterday, I was talking to you a little bit because I was heading out to Leafs practice, and we were just talking a little bit about it. And I asked you about the first time kind of cameras and microphones converged on you, and what a foreign thing that was for a young
player. It is hard. When you have 5-6 cameras around you and maybe 10-12 people, it's hard. And the first time that happened, I was telling Hugh yesterday that it was at the World Juniors. And I was at home for a couple of days. You go to the local rink at York University, and then all of a sudden, my mom drops me off in a 89 red Topaz.
Did she pack your lunch?
I was 19, and she drops me off at York University. And I'm strolling in with my bag. I had like a bar in my hand, and all of a sudden, 89 people came out of the bushes, and it was like microphones in your, and it was just like, oh my God, like what is happening right now, and you don't really deal with that in junior.
Jonathan Toews or something?
Yeah, I was like, I think you got the wrong guy. I'm trying to think. Jason Spezza was on the team that year.
Michael Zigomanis, Z-I-G-G.
Name and position, please. But back then, you guys weren't given the media training that the guys are now coming up, were you?
No, things are different now. You see guys like Jeff Merrick's talking to junior teams, and agents are bringing in media guys to talk to them and getting them ready because it's a big deal, right? And you see some things. I think the bigger issue is social media is involved right now, and that's kind of tied into it because you're only a click away, and you might not think about certain things. I know I've said stuff on Twitter where you kind of hit send, and you're like, ugh, maybe that was an iffy comment, and you're getting kids that – you know, they're going to junior at 16, 17, and everybody's watching them, what they're saying.
But I feel like it's also a benefit for kids of that age.
Double-edged because, sword, for sure.
Yeah, but there's a familiarity with being on camera and recording yourself and that presentation and making a video and putting it on Twitter. So although it's not the same thing as having six camera people with microphones shoved in your face, there's still more of a familiarity. Whereas, like, with you guys, what did you guys have... like those cameras that the light bulb like burst that the person went under the hood.
Everyone had to stay very still.
Yeah, that's what you guys had, right?
Explosion.
You never smiled in the photograph because you had to stand there for 11 minutes. I know I don't know if it happens with NHL coaches. I know that it certainly is happening now when Major League Baseball teams go to hire managers. They conduct mock press conferences. They bring in their PR people. They might even bring in a media person or two.
That they trust.
And they do mock post-game scrums or mock post-game podiums, one-on-one interviews. Can you communicate your message or the team's message? They want to know that.
It's strange that you mentioned that because I do a little bit of PR stuff for a friend's company, and we talk to executives, like not in sports, but business executives. And these are usually very high-powered men and women, and they're leaders of their industry, and they think they know. Until we do a mock interview with them and then play it back for them. And then they go, oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at the way I was standing. Look at what I was saying.
Fire me now.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't hire me. Anyway, I was just walking by, and I heard Ziggy, you know, taking shots at me.
Listen,
I had to come in and defend my own honor.
I remembered you.
Thank you,
Ashley. I remembered you, and I appreciated your coverage, unlike some people in this room.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It was an honor.
We'll have to dig up some old clips. How about that? All right.
There is a seventh angle to the six pack coming up a little bit later. Just random shots at Ziggy.
Oh, I'm down for that.
Flannel Fury.
Yes.
Bring it.
Absolutely.
Bring the Flannel Fury on a Tuesday morning. Huberl, he'll be back in just a few minutes. And this is a pretty appropriate segue into Trollgate. Is this where we're at now with Drew Doughty's comments? So let's set this up. Drew Doughty yesterday is asked. Now, we've all been either professional athletes, Ziggy, or on beats, you and me, Ashley, where we put our microphones in athletes' faces and ask them questions on the record and they answer. This started a week and a half, 2 weeks ago when the Capitals were in town, and Alexander Ovechkin was asked specifically about what it takes to win a Stanley Cup and what did he learn through the years, through all the Capitals' failures, specifically and particularly against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the playoffs. And then he was asked to follow up how that pertained to the Toronto Maple Leafs, young players, and he said, look, you've got to change how you play. Well, the Los Angeles Kings, who are in town tonight, only come into town once each and every year. And Drew Doughty is a two-time Stanley Cup champion. And he was asked specifically about what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. And does this Maple Leafs team have what it takes?
You know, if any team wants to be successful in the playoffs, they need their top scorers playing good defense and they need their best defenders chipping in on the offense. That's the only way you're going to win. So you need all-around hockey from everyone.
Is it inevitable with that Leafs team when you look at the roster and, like, the makeup?
What do you mean inevitable? That they can do that?
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't say that. I know they have a really good roster, but, I mean, a lot of teams have good rosters in this league, and I don't think they're in first place in the East, are they? So that means right now there's some better teams than them. just judging off the standings.
So that's arguably bulletin board material, except the questions. And I'm not being critical because we've all been in this situation if we've been a reporter. The questions are leading him toward those answers. I think we, as the media, have started to troll the local hockey team.
Mike, do you want to weigh in? Because I have some very specific thoughts on this.
Well, first off, I don't think his comments were that malicious. I don't think he was attacking the Leafs. I don't think he was going after them.
Agreed on all that.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday. He's asked a question. He could have just said, what I would have said was, it's not my team. I'm not going to comment. That's what I would have said.
That would have been the hockey player answer.
And it would have been over. But I don't even know that. I mean, what other sports, if you're in the NFL or MLB, I mean, what are you going to say when somebody asks you about another team? It's like, what do we need to do to beat them? Maybe then I can have an answer, but why aren't they winning? What was the second question?
No, he asked if it was inevitable if a roster as talented as the Leafs was going to eventually get to the Stanley Cup final or be a contender or
figure it out.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, and it's, I don't understand. Yeah, it's, we want to hear it. I mean, I love hearing what guys that have won, what they say. There is a difference, though, and nothing against Doughty, two Stanley Cups. He's one of my favorite defensemen in the league, but there's a little bit difference between the Washington Capitals and Alexander Ovechkin and Drew Doughty and the LA Kings in the last 2-3 years. This is a team that's just won. They can beat any team every night, but what have the LA Kings done in the last 2 years? That's kind of what pops out to me, where I would be a little bit more cautious on who I'm giving advice to at that point. And I know that's besides the point, but it's one of those things where when Doughty comes in and says this kind of stuff, I don't disagree. I mean, do you disagree with what he said?
No, this isn't, like, there's not a problem with anything that he said. I think there's two things. I think, Scott, you're right. The questions are leading, but also nothing is inevitable. We have former athletes that come on our show all the time, very high-profile athletes, as a matter of fact, because this is Lead Off on Sports FM 90 The Fan, and only the best for you. But we have high-profile athletes, coaches, managers, executives that come on, and this common story that you do hear a lot is, man, this 1 year, we had a hell of a team. The chemistry was fantastic. We thought we were going to make a run. We could have been a dynasty if, and, or but this. And you never get back there. So first of all, nothing is inevitable. It's an unfair question. And Drew Doughty's voice in these instances tends to be quite monotone. So I think that there's a way that if you were just hearing it or half listening, you could think that he was kind of being a bit of a jerk about it. Like, obviously not. Like, nothing's inevitable. No. Like, very, yeah, you could take it as a negative thing, I believe. But also when he's asked specifically about the Leafs team and what they need to do, when he took his answer, he's paused, as a matter of fact, in the clip prior. He's like, let me just make sure I'm saying this the right way. Then he says, if any team wants to be successful. So I don't even really think he took the opportunity to shoot towards the Leafs specifically in fire shots. I think he was just talking about it as a whole. And quite frankly, maybe some of his teammates, to your point, Ziggy, could probably listen to the things that he's saying and think, yeah, you do need to stop playing for yourself. You do need to play for your team. There are different ways to go about it to be successful. So to me, these comments aren't necessarily divisive. But to your point, Scott, I do think the question floodgates have been opened where nothing is off limits, and clearly everyone wants someone to comment on the state of the Leafs as they are now.
Well, you're circling a name. So the Kings are coming in. Nobody is flooding Angie Kopitar, who would be as or more qualified than Doughty to speak on these things. Nobody's flooding him at his locker stall.
Because no one cares what he would have to say, because he's not an outspoken guy. He's
egg, but that's my point.
Yeah.
That's my point. You go to Drew Doughty because you know there's a possibility. There's not a guarantee, but there's a possibility you're going to get a gold mine. And these clips, I agree with Ashley in that they are not malignant, but these clips are getting play.
Mm-hmm.
And he is talking directly about what it takes to win, and it is applicable to the Leaf situation in this market right now, where it is undeniable that the high-end talent on this team has never been greater, at least not in our lifetimes. And the game is played far differently now than it was 40 years ago, so no point in comparing eras. So there's an unquestioned talent level on this team, but there is a serious question, and I mean a serious question, about whether this team can win a Stanley Cup.
And they can. This team's makeup can win a Stanley Cup. Obviously, we've seen what's happened when one of their top guys goes down, Tavares out of the lineup, then you have Muzzin out. You're going to see situations where some guys are going to go down. What does your team do then? That's the big question these last 2 weeks. And I think they answered it. They weren't great, but still, without Tavares in the lineup, this team's still competing. They're still winning games. It might not be consistent, but they are. Back to your question about media and who you go after. If you were ever reporting on a team, would you go after certain guys that you knew they were going to give you an expanded answer?
Not would you, do you? Yes.
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 And in fact.
So you go after Doughty, then Kopitar.
And let's not say go after, like it's some kind of witch hunt, because I feel like that's a really negative connotation. But if you have, it's a job. So you have an assignment. And if they send me out, like Hugh was out yesterday at practice, and he knows that, I don't know, Andreas Janssen doesn't give long answers, that he's notoriously short with the media, that he hides out in the back until the last second and then only talks to the stragglers because he really doesn't like to do it, because there are players that avoid the media at all costs. You're not requesting to talk to him. For what? Unless you have to. Unless he has a game, unless there's a scandal, unless there's something coming back from an injury. Okay, yeah, I need an update from you. But I'm not going to talk to someone I know is going to be brisk with me.
But the other thing is you try to have a sense of who the person is and what the moment is. So I'll try and peel the curtain back a little bit with Jose Bautista. Jose Bautista was one of the smarter baseball players I ever covered. And if he wasn't having any of it, if he thought you were coming to him for clickbait or quote bait, he'd indulge the questions, but he would be brief. But there were times where you knew he had something to say. There were little tip-offs. So, for example, we're in Oakland in 2014, and the Jays get walked off on a BS reviewed call. And Jose is sitting at his locker stall in the visitors' clubhouse with his back to us, which is unusual, because at that point, when we get in after talking to John Gibbons, he'd be in the shower, or he'd be in the back having a meal or whatever. He's sitting there. I walked over to him. He didn't see me coming because his back was to us. And I say, Jose, he looks up at me, jumps up off his chair, throws on his Blue Jays baseball cap, and before the cameras are on, says, let's go. And the next 2.5 minutes were gold. So you have a sense of who it is you're dealing with. You have a sense of the moment in a given situation. Particular incident happens in a game. In this case, the LA Kings only come in once. Drew Doughty is a 2-time Stanley Cup champion, an Olympic gold medalist, likes to talk, is a relatively local kid. So this is his opportunity to be in front of the microphones in Canada and in the largest market in our country. And all of his family and friends are going to hear it. You go to him because you know there's a chance, no guarantee, but there's a chance you're going to get something.
And I like the fact that players will give you an honest answer, and it's great. So I don't want to go after guys for giving these answers, or the Ovechkin. People kind of jumped all over him. I don't want to do that because...
Who was critical of him? People were?
I'd say a lot of people were kind of jumping on that whole situation and blowing it up in general. And it wasn't that...
We're not jumping on him for what he said.
It wasn't that big of a comment, even from Ovechkin.
Are you talking from outside the hockey world or inside the hockey world from friends of yours who may have been texting saying, geez, that crossed the line a little bit? Because this is, in the hockey culture, I mean, we'll talk a little bit later on about Anthony Davis. The Lakers are into Chicago to play the Bulls tonight. They only go to Chicago once, West Conference team versus Eastern Conference team. He was discussing yesterday the possibility of signing with the Bulls as a free agent this coming offseason. He's a Laker.
Nothing's like playing at home.
But in the NBA, you expect sometimes to hear that from superstars. In hockey, it's like, nope, don't go there.
Right? Yeah, you don't hear it often. I just believe that the whole Ovechkin thing got maybe blown out just a little bit. People were taking his comments. I don't want to say it out of context. He's, you know, like people said, it's English is not his first language, and some things don't come across the way they should.
But Ziggy, it reinforces the narrative about the doubts we have about this Leafs team based off of what we're seeing. Nobody is disputing the skill and the high-end talent of this Leafs team. People are wondering whether they can put it together.
A lot of fans are now, I think they're open to a different view of the Leafs, for sure. You get a lot of Leaf fans are like, this is the team, we have the guys, what's going on? And then I agree. Now you have Doughty and Ovechkin, two Stanley Cup winners, come and say these two things about the team, whether directly or indirectly. And now if you're a Leafs fan, you sit here and you're like, maybe these guys do have to give more. Maybe this is the players. That's what's kind of come out of it for me. Because what both of these guys have said doesn't surprise me at all. Like, I'm not shocked one bit.
To me, it just signifies that the league's not worried about the Leafs in their current iteration. That's what that means to me. Because you know what you don't do? You don't go into someone's city and poke the bear of a team that you're worried about, of people you don't want to ruffle their feathers because you know they're going to come out with a bit of an edge. You know they're going to come out with something to prove. When you do that, and there's really no response. And I know you said you liked the way that they played against the Caps, but for me, it was still too inconsistent when someone's going to be that pointed about talking about you, your program, your teammates, your friends, throwing everything into a tailspin. It means to me that the league doesn't have the same level of respect that maybe they did when this group was first compiled together, or B, hasn't seen anything where they are worried.
Well, the thing about that, what you said, inconsistency, that is an issue, and that's a problem because it has been one good game, one bad game, and I know I'm saying they've had injuries and you have a lot of new faces and the chemistry's not there yet, but that inconsistency of just what Scotty talks about, playing away from the puck, a team that's committed to playing defense, just playing with intensity is what's just not there every night. And it's with some guys, it's changing even from period to period. And that's the big issue right now.
Well, Ziggy, the 2009 Penguins that you're on, let's just do this for the hell of it. The 2009 Penguins, the team you were on, come into town tonight to take on the 2019 Maple Leafs. What's the chatter in your locker room?
Right now, it's,
how do we beat these guys? What's that chatter? What's the game plan?
The first thing is going to be play physical. These guys, they don't want to play physical. That would be number one. Two, make them play in their own end. A lot of guys aren't committed to playing in their own end right now. And three, just don't get frustrated if they come at you with, because you at least do have those bursts of in the game where it's just like, wow, these guys are the best in the league. And I want to see the Leafs go back to what they did before. I know no one liked the stretch pass. I think the stretch pass and lengthening the ice is dangerous. High flips. I want to see them bring them back because that opened up so many different things from last year. They would send one long, too long. They might not work. And then that opens up shorter plays coming out of your zone with speed. So I want to see that. I don't know why that stopped. I don't know why what they thought that other teams were doing to defend that so well. But that's one thing I want to see them do. And I don't, maybe the analytics aren't there to support that game. But when I'm coaching at UFT, we try to do that constantly. We don't have the team the Leafs have, but it's something where it's just dangerous for a lot of guys. When you send a puck high in the air or you try to lengthen the ice, it's hard for a lot of defenders in the league. Maybe not your top defenseman or top two, but those are some of the things.
But you're immediately putting people on their heels, first of all. They have to be cognizant of it. And to your point, if the Leafs have been having so much success with faceoffs in the defensive end, you don't really have to worry about icing or starting plays in your zone that much with that stretch pass if no one makes contact with it.
Yeah, and what you just said about faceoffs, make sure you bear down the circle. Leafs have had some bad nights. Gauthier's been good for them when he's been put in that spot in the defensive zone, but that's another thing. But those are the main takeaways. I've said this, we were talking about this last week, how I said I don't think teams really fear playing against them. They don't fear coming in here. You have to play this game one of two ways. You either have to play it hard and physical or really fast. If you don't play with one of them, you cannot win. So if Leafs are known as a fast team and they just aren't playing that way with or without the puck, they're not playing physical, so they will not win. And that's when we see the Leafs in these funks, when they don't play well, when the game, they can't put three periods together, that's the biggest issue. And then you get the top teams. They have a little bit of everything, right? You have Washington. They're fast. And then you get Wilson running around. You get Ovechkin, your top goal scorer, who throws some of the biggest hits in the league. And that's when it becomes really hard. And I know the St. Louis Blues aren't the fastest team, but they don't get credit for that enough.
Pete Jensen, former Raptor Muggsy Bogues, David Amber at 7:30, and coming up, Hugh Burrell with the six-pack.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now let's crack open the six-pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
Hey, you know when at a sporting event, some jackass runs onto the field and the cameras don't show it? Well, it happened again last night at the Monday Nighter in New York between the Cowboys and the Giants. Some jackass did run onto the field. A cute, furry little jackass.
He's walking. He's walking to the three. He's at the two. And the cat is in the CDW red zone. CDW, people who get it now, a policeman, a state trooper has come on the field. And the cat runs into the end zone. That is a touchdown. And the cat is elusive, kind of like Barkley and Elliott.
Yes, a black cat kind of like ran Barkley onto the field. Kevin Harlan with the great call there. By the way, Cowboys beat the Giants 37-18. Cowboys take a half-game lead on the Eagles atop the NFC East.
Kevin Harlan's calls are great.
Yep.
He, remember the streaker?
The guy's drunk,
but there he goes.
Yeah.
And it's some about black cats, the 1969 Cubs at Shea Stadium.
Yes.
They
went into that tailspin after the cat walked in front of, was it
Ron Santo in the on-deck circle. Yeah. I'll tell you what though, if that cat is supposed to represent bad luck for the New York Giants, I ain't laying that at the feet of the cat. They're just bad.
Here's a stat for you though. Giants quarterback Daniel Jones won his first two starts as a rookie. Then he's lost now his next five. The only other rookie quarterback to win his first two and lose his next five? John Elway. I'm not saying he's John Elway.
Oh, you're not saying.
I'm just saying.
So what you're saying is he may end up winning two Super Bowls, but should never be the general manager of an NFL football team in retirement?
Yeah, okay. In a roundabout way, yeah. Well, the Leafs host the LA Kings tonight. Defenseman Jake Muzzin returns from injury to face his old club, and it looks like Captain John Tavares will be back as well.
Yeah, I think over the last couple of days, made some more really good progress. So still got to talk to the medical staff after today, but feel pretty good and would obviously like to be in tomorrow. So we'll cover our bases and hopefully that's the case.
Leafs have been treading water a little bit, Ziggy, without their captain, but man, it'll be nice to get him back in there.
While they fared well without him, if that's any glimpse of what happens when they lose one of their top guys, I don't mind their game. But yeah, we see how much he means to them, especially on the power play. The power play just doesn't look like it has anything going. When one unit doesn't go, it's like the other one just falls on its face, and that's kind of what I take it. But broken finger? I don't think I ever missed a day with a broken finger. You tape it up to the other one, you put it in one spot, and you get back on the ice.
I asked him about that yesterday. I said, how is the mobility? He said the mobility's fine. It's just the strength. You don't get this. His strength isn't back to 100%. I guess when you're an offensively gifted player like him.
Yeah, we all know that your wrist shot is dependent on your left index up, finger strength. Yeah. Also,
well, I didn't really have hands, so I guess that's a good point. Thanks. As I know you were going
thanks
there.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Ziggy, yeah. Tape up all your fingers. Get up there.
Win face-offs.
Exactly. But it looks like Tavares will be back against the Kings, and that's good news.
Three.
So across the hall at the Leafs practice facility yesterday, the Kings were going through their paces. Afterwards, Drew Doughty was mobbed because, well, he always has something to say. And he didn't disappoint when asked about the Leafs' style of play.
You know, if any team wants to be successful in the playoffs, they need their top scorers playing good defense, and they need their best defenders chipping in on the offense. That's the only way you're going to win. So you need all-around hockey from everyone.
Is it inevitable with that Leafs team when you look at the roster and, like, the makeup?
What do you mean, inevitable? That they can do that?
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't say that. I know they have a really good roster, but I mean, a lot of teams have good rosters in this league, and I don't think they're in first place in the East, are they? So that means right now there's some better teams than them, just judging off the standings.
Kept waiting for Dowdy to say something, oh, controversial and clickbait and all the stuff you guys were talking about earlier, but this really wasn't. This was kind of on the nose. Yeah.
It wasn't that bad, but would have been even more interesting if he would have given a full, real answer. That was kind of just, you want to know what? Make it general. Don't really say the Leafs. Say everybody. Bring up the standings.
Well, he did say, oh, I got to be careful what I say here before he kind of gathered his thoughts and then moved on.
But if you know who Drew Doughty is, that answer could have been really juicy.
Yeah.
Maybe it's got something to do with the fact that the Kings aren't very good.
No, they're not.
Haven't been for a couple of years now. And Doughty himself appears to be in decline. I'm more fascinated by the fact that we in the media are taking these sorts of questions to people we think will give us those types of answers, because it just sort of permeates this narrative that we doubt this hockey team, and we doubt them based off of what we've seen this year, compounded on the first round defeats at the hands of the Bruins the last couple seasons.
But have they not given us at least some reason to doubt them this year?
Yes. Yeah. That's why we're asking
Absolutely.
Those questions.
Yeah.
Four.
All right, so we all remember that goal last week when the Canes' Andrei Svechnikov scored that lacrosse-style goal on the Flames. He scooped up the puck and then shoveled it into the top corner while coming out from behind the net. Most fans thought that was kind of cool. You know who didn't think that it was cool? Leafs goaltender Freddie Anderson, who was asked by Hockey Central's Jeff Merrick yesterday if those types of goals should be allowed.
Yeah, I definitely think if sticks are flying around the head, I think it's worth having a discussion at least.
Ziggy, should they be allowed? Yes or no?
They should be allowed. Of course, Jeff Merrick is asking the question. I think he's on an island by himself that says these goals shouldn't be allowed. Come on, if you can actually pick a puck up like that in a game and put it in the net, just picking it up at all is almost impossible. For you to do it in the flow of a game, it's incredible. We're not going to see these every year. This is a one-off. Might not see one for another 5 years. They should be allowed. I don't like the fact when, if you're going to say, if it goes off the goalie's head or if you make contact with the head, it shouldn't count.
Which
I'm okay with that.
Svechnikov did. If you look at the replay, he whacked, I forget, was it Riddick who was in net for the Flames? I forget who the goalie was.
Yep.
But he got whacked pretty hard right in the mast.
Yeah, so yeah. If there's head contact from the stick, I'm okay with them calling it back. But even at that, it's not that he's not going to be going down.
He didn't even hit that hard. He wasn't even in concussion protocol.
That's right.
I don't see the problem.
That's
also,
right.
Just a little insult to injury. You're going to let one of those goals go in? A little whack in the side of that. No,
also,
sure.
Is there any rule that a player can't, like, scoop the puck up
and just skate
at
down the
center ice?
Ice
and just skate with it on a stick?
Yeah, if he doesn't want to get blown up.
Yeah, well, you got to catch me first.
Yeah, if you can actually
you catch me. I'm speaking in
general. Yeah, wait a second here. Okay.
You're not challenging anyone to a foot race,
Tortoise,
my friend.
Would catch me.
But yeah, if you can pick a puck up, go ahead and do it. It's not the guys make it look easy.
Sure. All of a sudden it becomes Irish hurling out there. It's great. I'm all for that.
Five.
So the Blue Jays made a couple of moves yesterday. They traded prospect Chad Spanberger to the Brewers in exchange for right-handed pitcher Chase Anderson. Anderson 8-4 last year, 4.21 ERA, had 124 strikeouts. Jays also outrighted second baseman Devin Travis to AAA Buffalo, meaning that Travis's injury-plagued stint with the Blue Jays is likely over. He can accept the move to Buffalo or become a free agent. Scotty, what do you make of these moves
yesterday? Well, the Travis thing is sad because I always felt like I go back to opening day 2015 at Yankee Stadium when he hit that home run and he had that brilliant April, won American League Rookie of the Month, and everything was on the up and up. Injuries betrayed this guy. Had he reached his potential, he would have been a go-to for the media and he would have been a legitimate leader in that clubhouse. Devin Travis is as good a guy as I had the opportunity to cover. The Anderson thing is pretty simple. Back end of the rotation arm, low risk play for the Blue Jays, but they still have a lot of work to do in that starting rotation.
When it comes to Devin Travis, when it comes to the new pitcher Chase Anderson, there was a quote that I was reminded of by J.E. Skeets of the No Dunks podcast. Lawrence Frank said it, availability is a talent. He was talking about Andre Drummond when he was in Detroit. He was Andre Drummond's first coach. Availability to be available to play, that's a talent. And that's not something that people talk about that much.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Travis just hasn't been able to stay healthy. Will there be a market for him?
I think he gets a minor league deal, if anything. But there will be no deal in which any team takes on any degree of risk. Just, I mean, the body, the knees, the weird stuff with the shoulder, that extra bone that they found, like, it's just, it's really unfortunate.
Six.
The World Series champion Washington Nationals visited the White House yesterday. First baseman Ryan Zimmerman was in full MAGA mode.
Mr. President, me and my teammates, first of all, I'd like to thank you for having us here. This is an incredible honor that I think all of us will never forget. And we'd also like to thank you for keeping everyone here safe in our country. And continuing to make America the greatest country to live in the world.
That's enough.
Trump also with a bizarre kind of backwards hug on Kurt Suzuki yesterday. We were talking about this before we came on. Yes, most of the players did go, but there were a few that didn't go. And what was interesting is they didn't make a big deal of it. And who was it that did?
Sean Doolittle.
He didn't make a big deal of it.
Well, he spoke up, but the Anthony Rendon. The Javi Garras of the world just didn't go. I mean, whatever your approach is your approach, but we got to stop pretending that an attempt to be apolitical with this particular individual in the White House is anything but political. If you are there, you endorse the behavior.
In 2009, we did with the Penguins. A couple guys didn't go, but they just said they couldn't. We didn't even know it was.
Got a dentist appointment, can't go.
Yeah, but it was not till later that we actually found out, hey, these guys didn't want to go to the White House. I'm on the opposite view of that. People ask me all the time, would you go right now to the White House? And as much as I don't agree with anything that's happening with Donald Trump and anything that the Republican Party is doing, I would still go to the White House because I wouldn't take it from a political standpoint. I would want to go to the White House for just the history and what it means to go in there.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't matter if it was a Republican or a Democrat.
The difference is that even if your intentions are purely historical and purely as a tourist, the President of the United States uses it as ammo in a political way. So to Scott's point, there is no such thing as apolitical in this moment because he won't allow for it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I respect that view. It's just, I can only tell you from my personal experience in 2009, it didn't matter which side or who was in there. We were going to the White House. It's something every team does it, and you're just part of the history of teams going to the White House when you win.
It's just different now.
I think absolutely it is. It's a different climate for sure, but I think it still becomes a personal decision, and the question you have to ask yourself, it doesn't matter what political stripe you are.
Do you feel lucky?
Can you... Yeah, I fired six shots, or maybe seven. Can you separate the visit from politics? I personally can. I can do that.
Yep.
To me, it would not be a political thing. I'm just going, hey, it's cool. It's the White House. Awesome.
Yeah, but you're standing behind that guy as he garbles on about all the stuff he loves to talk about. And look, Ashley and I aren't saying you can't go to the White House, but we are saying if you do, you're open to criticism.
Sure. Absolutely. But again, it all comes down to a personal choice, and it has nothing to do, I firmly believe, it has nothing to do, for some of these guys, some of these baseball players, absolutely, they're full-on Trump supporters, and we would be shocked to know how many professional athletes are.
You're telling me white rich guys like Donald Trump?
Because they got some money, man. They got some money. They want to protect it. But it's for me, and I guess for Ziggy too, I don't know. I can differentiate between being political and just going there for the visit. Some people can't. That's great. That's fine. But it's a personal thing.
I have no issue. Yeah, either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's changed
how's
the
that
view
for fence sitting?
Of that office and what it means, very sadly. Anthony Davis asked about joining the Chicago Bulls. He said what? And Ziggy had a rough day yesterday. We'll get into it.
subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So the Lakers are into Chicago tonight to play the Bulls, and we were talking a lot about the Kings visiting the Leafs and the Doughty comments earlier on in the hour. This is like the Kings coming to Toronto, a one-off. Lakers are in the Western Conference, Bulls are in the East, so you only go to Chicago once if you're LA. Anthony Davis, the Brow, is a free agent at the end of the year. Could this be a one-and-done with the Lakers? Well, he was asked about joining the Bulls yesterday. He says, I mean, obviously, it's nothing like playing at home. I don't know. I'm a free agent, but I mean, we'll see. We'll see. It's a possibility.
I love them.
This is why I love basketball.
You sound like a rock and talk submission. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll be,
maybe downward inflection at the end. This is what I love about basketball. This guy is under contract to the Los Angeles Lakers and is for at least the next 6 months or so. I guess July 1st, technically, next summer. And he openly gives an answer that could be perceived as I might be a one and done L.A. Laker. You don't get that in most other sports.
Why open that door up, though? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Why even say why?
Well, so he was asked by an athlete. I believe there was like younger kids around at a Q&A at a Nike-sponsored event. So they got the microphone and they get to ask, hey, are you going to come play at home? And so when he's like, yeah, I guess it's a possibility, where I'm at right now is nothing like home. And so kids in Chicago are like, yeah, I can't imagine LA is anything like we have here. I mean, I'm a free agent next year, so we'll see. It's a possibility. I mean, there's lots of ways that you could have answered that, but the candor is there and it is a possibility. That's just full facts.
That changes it for me a little bit. If I'm at an event with kids and they do events like that sometimes where they get to ask you whatever you want, of course you're going to say, if I was in Toronto and I'm playing for the Phoenix Coyotes and they say, hey, would you ever want to play for Toronto? I don't know if I would have said word for word what Davis said, but I would have said something like, yeah, it's every kid's dream to kind of play in Toronto. And I don't think you can take it the same way as if you're in a scrum at training camp or after the first week of the season.
Trying to just keep those kids' dreams alive, right? And that would be a franchise-changing move for the Chicago Bulls if they were able to bring the Brow home. But it gets people talking, and the NBA, I think the NFL is in this category as well, but the NBA is as good about the off-the-court drama and discussion and staying on the forefront of the news cycle as any league out there. And that's what makes it, in my view, the best going these days. David Amber at 7:30. The Blue Jays making some moves and setting up the Leafs and Kings. That's next.
Get an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. That's an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. So remember, get... Wow! For only at Pizza Pizza.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley.
There must be something you're good at.
I'm kind of psychic. I have a fifth sense. What do you mean? It's like I have ESPN or something.
Ziggy.
I wake up every morning in a bed that's too small, and then I go to work to a job for which I get paid too little.
And Scotty Mack.
You're a pro. A pro. Hey, look at me. Pro.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So you're talking off air, Ziggy, like, I mean, it's just a lucky chance that you're here today. What happened yesterday?
Well, I wasn't sure if I was going to wake up this morning, so I get into the office yesterday, and we got the message the night before. Mike Gentile, our producer, wanted to buy breakfast
Yes.
For everybody and coffee. So I get here and he has it for me ready. And I texted him to get egg and cheese McMuffin. So I get here, I open up, but we're working in the morning, right? Like we're talking, we're working, we're getting ready. And I open it up, but I don't take a look at it. And then when I'm halfway through, I see this dark piece in the middle. And it was a piece of ham, I'm pretty sure. So that was...
Oh, for you.
So I was a little worried coming on the show. I'm like, I haven't had meat in whatever, 15 years. And I was concerned I wasn't going to make it through. Then I go to bed. I wasn't feeling well most of the day. But I did wake up, and here I am again.
If people didn't know you were talking about a breakfast sandwich... I don't even know where that story could have gone or come from. That was wildly, yeah. I mean, so...
Have you ever bit into something or had something in your salad where you're like, oh my gosh, oh, actually we have, haven't we?
What?
Our pizza night for football a couple weeks ago, and it was gluten-free.
No, that's different. Because here's the thing. When you get something that you assume is going to be gluten-free, that you assume is going to be cauliflower crust, that you assume is going to be vegan, when it actually has flavor and texture, you're like, oh, thank God, they've cracked the code. And then you realize, nope, that was on my do not eat list.
Well, what was the Seinfeld episode with the kosher and the lobster? They put the lobster.
Oh, and the Hamptons.
Yes.
Yeah, the Hamptons.
That's all I could think about after when I was coming on. It was like, was this a joke? Did the three of you get together and like, hey, did you guys have your private chat? You did. Hey, let's sneak some ham into his sandwich this morning.
I mean, I've got a lot of goals in life, and one of them is to screw up as many vegetarian lifestyles as possible. That's just my MO. Hey, Ashley, let's just make sure that when we stop at the restaurant at 5 a.m., we sneak a little bit of flattened sausage into that egg and cheese sandwich.
Let's rim his coffee mug with said sausage patty. So he
it's
won't
like a Caesar. Yeah, meat Caesar for Mike's expense.
You stuck pig in my breakfast sandwich. Thank you.
You're welcome best day of your life.
And instead of a celery stick in that meat Caesar, you're getting a beef jerky.
That sounds so nice. I do love beef jerky. I forgot to eat a little bit yesterday. I forgot to
things
eat a little
happened.
Bit.
I forgot to.
I got
to.
Busy. So I was headed out to dinner and I was starving and I didn't want to pass out while I was driving out to Mississauga. So I stopped and I got gas station beef jerky. And I mean, yeah, it's not ideal, but what's the alternative?
They actually do make plant-based beef jerky now.
So it's not jerky though. So you can't, but you actually can't call it that. Like, stop with the fraudulent names, vegans.
It's beef with like B-E-F-E or whatever. There's an extra E.
Buffet?
Well, the chicken has like the no C and just the K with the N for the chicken. You know, when they do the mock chicken, they don't write it out chicken on
this
the pack.
Tofu guy, right?
How do you not know this stuff?
I feel like I'm smelling burnt toast or something.
Yeah. Right? Stick out your tongue. Is it going crooked? Jeez.
So that's how you know if it's the real beef
well,
or
so
not.
Well, I'm so sorry for your strife, your struggle. I'm glad that you made it through the rain and came out on the other side on top and alive and well.
I wish there was a camera on the desk when I pulled the sandwich up because I set it down and started typing something out in the morning. And then I kind of looked at it and I was like, I don't know what that is in the middle, but that is not an egg, cheese, or a bun. And then I peeled it back and then stuffed it. No one looked over it.
So you had three more bites though?
I mean, I
like,
would.
Don't lie. I know you had more when you figured it out. You're like, well, I'm already in too deep.
It wasn't that bad.
To put a cap on this conversation, I can assure you that based on where we purchased that sandwich from, it's unlikely that whatever that was actually meat.
And I
so
feel...
you can feel better about that. Maybe you did not, in fact, betray your sensibilities.
Yeah. What percentage of those meat patties do you think is actually meat?
Pick your favorite integer. Negative a million.
Like when they say it's a ham filler or whatever they put meat in breakfast sandwiches, it can't be good stuff, or is it?
Well, maybe this is a bit for the show at some point. Ziggy works at a restaurant. Comes back with kitchen secrets, lets us all in.
I have worked at a restaurant before, actually. Well, I don't want to say restaurant, but I worked at Dave & Buster's. You guys ever been?
Well, there's a few.
Yeah.
The one at 407 or where?
Yeah, that's the one I worked at. I just got drafted by the Buffalo Sabres.
Oh, and refused to sign your contract.
When you refused to sign a contract, yeah. When you big-timed them.
He held out because he was at Dave & Buster's.
For sure.
Sorry, guys, I can't sign. I'm really bringing in the bucks from Dave & Buster's
now. Think of all the tickets.
I got really cool arcade games.
The worst thing about Dave & Buster's is you have, like, literally 750,000 tickets. Like, well, you can get this cool pencil. You're like, I just spent $80.
No, some of the...
I just spent $80 to get these tickets, and you want to refund me with a pencil?
Well, if you're good at the game, if you're good at the games, usually you'll get more tickets, but...
I said 750,000, literally, was the number I used.
Well, we'll segue, because we don't want to continue along this conversation and chase listeners away. Chase Anderson is a blue
tip. Probably did it,
very
though.
Smooth transition.
That probably was the straw that broke the camel's back, to be honest with you.
The camel is now in pieces on the desert sand.
Oh, no.
We'll never stand
Chase
up
Anderson.
Again.
Shout out. Welcome.
Welcome to Toronto. We're in a nicer city than Milwaukee. I can confirm that.
Okay.
Giannis, you're next, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know what to make of this acquisition in and of itself, but considering that about 80% of this starting rotation needed to be changed, reformed, improved, it's one step in the process. But they've got to get more arms, and they got to get better arms.
At this point, and I don't mean to disparage Chase at all, because for the last 3 years, he's gone out there and he's pitched at least 139 innings. He's made at least 25 starts. So when Toronto looks at their needs, and when you talk about stopgaps or band-aids, if you will, for the upcoming season, which will be another year of development for their young core, if Anderson is someone that can provide innings and eat up at bats, that's going to be something that the Blue Jays do need. How many bodies did we see in and out of the rotation last year?
God.
There's openers. There's people being called up. There's people being sent down. It was a revolving door. And once Sanchez and Stroman got traded, there was literally very little that you could depend on when it came to that rotation. And I think that that's what this team needs. They just need to know what to expect from certain pitchers on various days. And I know that nothing is set in stone ever. Things change. Injuries happen. There are always circumstances beyond your control. But when Mark Shapiro talks about what this team needs in terms of pitching, he wasn't out there saying, we need an ace. We need to go spend money, go shopping, and just get us some goodies. No, he said, we want dependability, we want availability, and we want some strikeouts. So here we go. This is going to be a lineup that doesn't really make your jaw drop, but it's going to hopefully be a rotation that produces people with potential. Because one of the things that we were talking about on Writer's Block yesterday, and Arash Madani pointed out that he was so happy that the Nationals were able to win the World Series with bona fide aces. None of this opener BS, none of these patchwork lineups, that they did it with horses on the mound. But the formula to get all these guys on your roster at once is all about cash. You're not going to develop four aces, three aces for your lineup. The chances that you draft and develop, can control and pay all three aces in a lineup are not going to happen. And even when you talk about first overall draft picks that went on to be successful pitchers, the list is pretty slim, at least recently, right? You have Strasburg for sure. You have Gerrit Cole, and then David Price, I would say, our first round, first overall pitching draft picks that went on to be everything that you hoped they would be. But for one team to get two or three of them on their roster at the same time, that's going to be about money. So with the Jays rotation this year, maybe you find two or three guys that have a little spark and you look to them for the years to come. But otherwise, Chase Anderson, you know, hopefully he has a consistent year than anything.
And these are the incremental marginal victories. So Chase Anderson has had a couple of decent years at the big league level. Chad Spanberger's a guy who's not there yet and may never be a major leaguer. So if you get some performance out of Chase Anderson, you consider that a win in the trade, but it's a marginal victory.
Yeah.
You know what the Toronto Blue Jays need, and none of us can sit here and promise it, because you just don't know. They need to fleece a team in a trade. Not intentionally,
but you need,
because everybody talks about the Chicago Cubs and they signed John Lester and John Lackey, and they got Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop for Steve Clevenger and Scott Feldman in a trade with Baltimore in the summer of 2013. And Arrieta turned into a Cy Young Award winner, the ace of that staff. Strop was a setup guy up until this year for the Cubs, who was very good at his job. Clevenger's a backup catcher. Scott Feldman has bounced around and may even be out of the game. He was a Blue Jay for a brief period of time. Like, that is an out-and-out fleecing. And when you win a trade of that significance, it can go a long way to turning your franchise around. Tweaking on the margins, and again, Chase Anderson's here, good. It gives him 150 innings, that's a win. But winning these little incremental marginal battles on the fringes is not, or are not, going to be the things that get you to the upper echelon of the American
League.
It
matters if you're already a contender.
So you
The tweaking does. The adding a wily vet down the stretch, the adding of a relief pitcher who's not in the middling middle.
The question I want to ask is, can your pro scouting and your decisions as a GM not get you in at all? Because if you look like a guy like Anderson in 2017, he's 12-4. Is that, if you're a pro scout and you're scouting players, the question you have to ask yourself, was this a career year for the guy? Or was this something where he can find it again? Because he's kind of lost it the last couple of years, correct?
Well, I mean, he's given up a lot of home runs.
So if you're not developing pitchers...
Who hasn't?
That's also a fair point.
Who hasn't given up home runs? Milwaukee
is a bandbox.
But if you're not developing your pitchers and you don't have the money to go and get them, this is the way you're going to have to find gems out there.
Yeah, but it's so difficult because pitchers, generally speaking, go through the pits of hell to come back out on the other side and be those World Series heroes. It's the strangest thing. You just assume a guy is going to need a Tommy John. There's going to be a shoulder flare up. There's going to be a year where his ERA is 7.5, and you just are like, I don't know what happened to him. He's a shell of his former self. Generally speaking, someone picks up the pieces, they revamp him, and he ends up being a stud for them. There's always like a weird telltale thing with pitchers. I think that what you want for success is young, controllable position players who can knock the snot out of a ball, and then you buy the pitching. But listen, to your point, if you're able to scout, if you're able to find diamonds in the rough to round out your pitching staff, or you strike gold with someone who becomes an unexpected ace, then all the power to you. That's not going to hurt you, of course, but it's just so difficult to predict what pitching prospects are going to turn into.
We live best in a world of comparisons. So this is one guy who came to my mind when I heard about this trade yesterday. A Milwaukee Brewers pitcher who gave up a ton of home runs, who the Blue Jays went and got just a few years ago. Marco Estrada had led the National League in home runs allowed in 2014. The Blue Jays were fed up with Adam Lind. They traded Lind to Milwaukee. They got Marco Estrada. He comes into the American League East. And me and everybody else who had an opinion on it said this guy was giving up more home runs than anybody in the National League, couldn't even keep his starting rotation spot. He was bullpen starter in Milwaukee. How's he going to come to the AL East and pitch in places like Yankee Stadium, Oriole Park? And the Orioles were a decent team. They were coming off a division championship after 2014 back then. So that's for context, because the Orioles are so god-awful now. How's he going to go to Fenway Park, even Tropicana Field, which is less a bandbox than the other three or four if you include Rogers Center? But how's he going to keep the ball in the yard? And then Marco Estrada found himself.
Yeah.
So maybe Chase Anderson can be that somehow, some way.
Well, and Marco Estrada is still criminally underrated for what he did for the Blue Jays in the postseason in 2015, 2016. He's going out there and throwing 11 strikeouts, 13 strikeouts in big game situations. So you're absolutely right. Reclamation projects in Major League Baseball shouldn't be a surprise to anyone at this point. It just seems like the narrative.
Steven Strasburg did what we thought he would, and he opted out. Hey, Ziggy, that's you and your hockey career. Like, I got 4 years and $100 million left on my deal.
Yeah, like, screw it. These opt-outs and options are just crazy to me. It's like $100 million for 4 years. You're like, you know what? I'm going to take my chances and opt-out. Yeah. Like,
why, though? Because it's $7 and $175 million when he signs it with the opt-out after the third year. So it's $4 and $1 million, and he's looking at it saying, I was just the World Series MVP. I proved myself. I'm 30 years old. He doesn't necessarily leave Washington, although he may, but what he does now is he tacks on. So why not throw another 3 years on the end of that contract at, say, $30, $35 million a year, and then $4 and $100 million becomes $7 and close to $200 million? That's what this is about.
If you're him and that deal came up, the last one that he opted out of, would you have signed that without your option to walk away? Like, how? I don't understand why the teams are giving these deals to these players.
Yeah, I mean, they're handed out like candy, but a lot of those players who don't perform to the level of their contracts and know that if they opted out and went back into the market would not get the annual average value that they do on their current deals, they reject it. David Price had a 3-year opt-out in Boston. Nope. And it's a 7-year, $217 million contract. After last season ended, the third of his 7-year deal with Boston, he said, I'm good, thanks. J.D. Martinez had an opt-out designated hitter for the Red Sox.
He opts in
because he knows, in this day and age, north of 30, I offer nothing defensively. I'm a bopper, but everybody's a bopper now. I can't increase my AAV above what I'm making now. It's safe for me to stay in. Jason Hayward did the same thing with the Chicago Cubs a year or two ago. He opted in because he was not going to get anything better than the 8-184 that he's working on with the Chicago Cubs because he hadn't hit enough. So guys do make the decisions to stay in, but Strasburg, Scott Boras is his agent, so that is a factor in this. Strasburg looks at it and says, World Series MVP, I just had a great year. My arm has been healthy for the last couple of seasons. I feel good. I can tack on the end of this.
And in your opinion, Scott, this is going to be similar to what happened with Toronto and the Mitch Marner deal and how it didn't necessarily affect change in and around the league, right? This is not going to adjust the market for anyone else just because he's on his own level. He's in his own stratosphere.
Well, maybe Cole.
Who is going to get $10 bazillion anyway.
Yeah, who is, and baseball people hate it when we use this word, unrestricted, because it's a hockey term.
Yeah.
But who is truly unrestricted? I mean, there is no contract there. He had no opt-in or opt-out. He is a true free agent. So really, Ashley, it's going to be about term with Cole.
Sure.
Right? Like, if he gets an 8 or a 10-year contract, and that's, with pitchers, that's a dangerous game.
That's super risky.
But if you 7 or 8 year him, he's going to get into that $250 million range. So he could help to set the market. But with guys like Kershaw getting north of 30, Zach Greinke's been on a contract north of $30 million per year for the last number of years after signing one with Arizona. Max Scherzer is on one.
Chris Sale. David Price. 30.
Chris Sale. And Chris Sale's a cautionary tale. He hadn't really been healthy. He's lost velocity. He didn't finish the season healthy with the Red Sox. So you're taking risks, but if you're Steven Strasburg, I mean, now's the time to do it. Because if you opt in, you're locked in for the next 4 years, and then what you get at 34 when you're a free agent is a shorter-term deal, and the money won't be as high.
They should make the opt-in, I mean, I don't know if this is a crazy idea, be at the start of your last year. So you can't wait till the end of the year. They should do it at the start of the year. All right, are you going to do it this year? You know what I'm trying to say? You know, it's like at the end.
Opt-out is on the final year of a 4-year deal, you have to decide if you want to opt in the third year. Yeah. You can't wait till the beginning of the fourth.
You can't wait. I think that would make it interesting. It's like,
Why do you hate athletes? Why do you want to see these organizations win? Just because hockey players aren't getting $100 million. Oh my goodness.
I don't understand how these teams are throwing these deals out there. Hockey players look at these deals and they're just like,
because it helps with negotiation. So if you give a player an opt out, maybe one of the things is like, they're like, I don't really know if I'm totally into this situation. Like, okay, sign for 4 years. The fourth year you can opt out. So really you're only beholden to us for 3. And then for teams, it's like, we'll pay you the money, but honestly, we're not sure you're going to hold up the test of time. You're not going to stand the test of time. So we're going to get the team option on the final 2 years because we get to decide if you're worth the value.
Well, and Ziggy, when you played, I mean, GMs were cooking up no movement clauses like they were Walter White in an RV. I mean, give me a marginal players were getting like full no moves.
And my issue with no movement clauses in contracts is that if you sign one, you should have to stick with it. So if you sign a player to it, you can't ask him to waive it after. That's one change I'd like to see right now. So right now, when
okay,
you
okay, but can a flip side, can a player say, "Well, I want out"? I mean, that doesn't mean you trade him, but well, I mean, course, Danny Heatley in Ottawa.
Of course, it happens when you have a no movement clause. Both parties can kind of go to the other and say, "I want to get moved," but you see it more from the organization standpoint, where they say, "Hey, you're making too much money. This isn't working out."
Patrick Marleau.
Yeah, we want. It's just not going. We want to move you. I think if you do sign that in your contract, you have to stick with it, because then it's not, guys aren't going to sign it. You're not going to see as many players saying, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to get locked into this contract with this team. What happens if they're not winning? What happens if you don't get the players? They don't spend the money."
The only problem I see in that situation is sometimes things just turn sour. They go south. Relationships get broken. There's things that you can't come back from. I'm surprised that Jamie Benn and the Dallas Stars in their front office were able to bounce back so seamlessly, at least on the surface, at least forward facing, from what went on there last year. Things like that happen and it gets crazy. And why would you want to be locked into a business scenario where no one's happy, where no one's winning? It's not beneficial for either party. So that's the only problem I see when you talk about locking someone in and making it finite.
Former Raptor Muggsy Bogues at 8 o'clock. David Amber of Hockey Night in Canada next.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand, absolutely free. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We'll play a little rock and talk later on in the hour. An opportunity to get you into the draw to win a pair of Leafs tickets to see them host the Flyers on Saturday. That's a draw we will make on Friday morning. David Amber is one of the hosts alongside Ron McLean on Hockey Night in Canada, and is prominent on Sportsnet's hockey broadcasts. And as he does each and every, what day is it? Tuesday. I have no idea. I'm telling you. Yeah, rise and shine.
Rise and shine.
I think sometimes we've had David on Wednesdays or Mondays. And it's like, oh my God, that bad to blank on the day of the week. Keep that one, Mon, and use it against me for future reference. David Amber joins us on Tuesdays, and he is here now because I know it's a Tuesday. Always good to chat, sir. Listen, let's start with Drew Doughty. And I don't know where Ashley or Ziggy may want to take this. I am less interested in Doughty's comments and more fascinated by our approach, and by that I mean the media. Have we, post Ovechkin a couple of weeks ago, taken to kind of trolling the Maple Leafs? Like, we're turning to former cup winners who know what it takes to win. We want to ask them the questions about what it takes to win, because we've developed a narrative in our mind that the Leafs maybe don't have what it takes.
Ooh, that's a great, wow. You're not throwing me a softball to start this thing out, are you?
I don't even know what day of the week it is, David. So you could just BS the answer and fool me.
Well, I mean, I think it's a valid question. I don't think we in the media are that smart to maybe be trolling the Leafs. I do think you gravitate towards people you know you're going to get candid, honest, interesting answers from. Alexander Ovechkin has always been very open with the media and has a lot to say, and he has a lot of clout because of what he's done. And same with Drew Doughty. You go to those people. You don't go to the guy who's going to say, "Get puck deep, 110%, God willing, things will work out if we play our game." I mean, you learn early on who's going to give you something and who's not. So I think it's just natural for us to gravitate towards the Drew Doughtys and the Alexander Ovechkins, whether we're there saying, "Oh, let's hope they say something crazy and salacious about the Leafs." I mean, sure, you always want to have something, a talking point, but I wouldn't say we're going as far as trolling the Leafs. I do think You know, I think the Maple Leafs, when you lose in the fashion that they've lost in back-to-back-to-back years in the postseason, in the last 2 years, you know, in a game seven, you know, in fairly dramatic fashion, and you get these big contracts that their big-name players have received, it draws the attention around the league. People talk about the Maple Leafs around the league, so they're a bit of a lightning rod, and I think that's just going to come with the territory. I wouldn't say anyone's going out necessarily trolling them, but the word is out on the Leafs, and they have to sort of prove to people they are built to have success in the spring, not just success in October.
David Amber is our NHL insider, brought to you by McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora. This is Leadoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mike Babcock seemed to pounce on the Ovechkin comments a couple of weeks ago. Is there anyone happier, David, than him when an opposing player, especially one he knows, he's coached Doughty at the international level, won an Olympic gold medal with him or two. Is there anyone happier than Babcock that he can take quotes from other players on other teams and run with them?
I think for a coaching staff, you're always looking for what can help motivate your players and what could, work for you. And quite frankly, if the music from Mike Babcock's going in one out in one ear and out the other, then he's going to look for other sources to say, hey, it's not just me who's saying we got to play this certain style. So, yeah, he did seem enthusiastic about it, and understandably so. I mean, I think it's been frustrating for the players. It's been frustrating for the fans. Certainly the media has had our ears perked up about what's going on with the Leafs. You know, basically, if you really look at it, a sub-500 team to this point. I mean, they've won 7 of 15 games, you know, the overtime and shootouts aside. They've lost more than they've won this year. So, I think there was a level of enthusiasm there, just thinking, yeah, it's not just me, guys. You think, you know, it's kind of like being a parent when someone else points out a problem, you know, your kid's having with discipline or whatever else. You're kind of saying, see, it's not just me. You know, there's other people out there identifying it. So, yeah, I think that's a fair statement, sure.
Now, why do you think, David, that this only seems to happen in Toronto? Because I'm trying to think of other cities, other teams that this comes up where they ask a star on the other team who has won about the team they're about to play, and it only seems like it goes on in Toronto.
That's a good question. I think one thing, first of all, I do think it, depending on the circumstance, it might come up elsewhere. I mean, I've heard, you know, other players comments, about Vancouver when they kind of maybe were identified the same way as an easier team to play against because of the lack of physicality or pushback in past years. But I also think it's the volume. I mean, Ziggy, you've been down there. You're down there. You were down there last week. You know, in Carolina, there's 6 people covering the team. You know, in New Jersey, there's 8 people covering the team. Toronto, there's just a multitude of people. The layers are incredible. When you're down at the morning skate, depending on the matchup, my goodness, I mean, it's 3, 4, 5 deep in the scrums to interview, you know, the third line center. And that's when you get the volume of that, there's going to be more questions and we're in this fishbowl here. And that's why you always hear when Randy Carlyle was here and when Ron Wilson was here, oh, I just ignore the white noise, ignore the white noise. And you don't hear that in other markets because there is no white noise. They'd love to have the media attention that we heap on the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I think it's just sheer volume. And when you get sheer volume, the way we see day in, day out with the Maple Leafs, someone has a hangnail and it's front page news, right? It's just how it is in this market.
Someone has a hangnail and you're not necessarily worried about mobility. It's more about finger strength at that point, right? I believe that's what we're doing now with hand injuries. And of course, I'm just poking fun at what's going on with John Tavares, but it seems as though he's going to be close to return, closer than not, I guess. It sounds like it's going to be a game time decision for him today. But we also know that because the coverage is so intense around this Toronto Maple Leafs team, that if they decide to show up and if they're able to put some consistent performances together this week, David, against the Kings, Golden Knights, and Flyers today, Thursday, and Saturday, that the conversation largely shifts, right? And now all of a sudden the narrative is like, don't worry, games in October don't matter. They found their stride just in time.
Listen, this is a really important stretch for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You just outlined what's happening this week. L.A., Vegas, Philly at home. And then they go for a long road situation. 8 of their next 9 in November are on the road. So I don't want to overstate this, but we're going to know, you know, when we do this 4 Tuesdays from now, we'll be able to identify what this team really is, what they look like. There'll be 30 games in. still have had a long road test, which they haven't had yet. They've had this slew of home games, and they're going to be seemingly healthy. You know, Hyman's coming back in the foreseeable future. Tavares should be back tonight. Muzzin's obviously only missed the game, but he'll be back. So this is the Leaf team that we expected to see. You know, Dermott's back in the lineup now. We're going to learn a lot about this team. And for all of their flaws, for all the problems, for all the scrutiny, you know, they're still in the top 7-8 teams in goals scored. They've shown they can score goals. If they can get some better goaltending and they can get, you know, better structurally defensively and be able to close out some games that they haven't been able to do so far, then you're right. The whole narrative actually could change. This could be, you know, this is an important stretch, and it can go either way.
Yeah.
I mean, if they continue to struggle, then we're going to be sitting here, you know, instead of November 5th or 6th, it'll be December 5th or 6th, and we'll be saying, wow, the Leafs are in some trouble because they're going to be sitting, you know, 11th or 12th or 9th or 10th in the conference, and that's not where this team was supposed to be situated. So this is a huge stretch for the Leafs, and it's going to be really interesting to see when they're healthy and have this long stretch of games, especially on the road, which Austin Matthews made a point of saying, we want to go on the road. It's good for our team. So he's going to get that opportunity, and let's find out what this team is about.
And your point about goals for is very well taken, but you know, when it comes to, I guess I'm going to use a banking analogy, an investment analogy, diversify your portfolio. Don't show me more of the things I know that are already going well for me, because that's what everyone's talking about when they come into town. Ovechkin, Drew Doughty, show me something different. Show me something new, because you can't win or you can't get to that next level doing the same tricks again and again. Again, you can't outscore your problems on a nightly basis. So we'll see where that lends them.
Yeah, you don't want to get to the point where we're like, oh, man, do we ever miss Ozaganov and Zaitsev? I mean, like, it's funny to even joke like that, but, you know, they switched out 5 defensemen that played over 270 games last year. So it is a new look to this blue line, and it was supposed to be on some levels an improved blue line. But we've heard guys like Brian Burke say, you know, last year with Zaitsev and Jake Gardner, he made a point of saying the blue line was better last year. And if Tyson Barry, you know, doesn't start to, you know, trend better than he's been trending thus far, then it could be a long season. I think the Leafs sort of banked on Barry being another dynamic puck-moving defenseman as he's been throughout his whole career, you know, alongside Morgan Rielly providing that 1-2 offensive punch. And that hasn't happened thus far. So I think that's a big part of it. We know this team can score. You're absolutely right. And what we need now is to see the Leafs have some defensive structure and some ability to shut down opponents. And quite frankly, the ability to hold onto the puck and not turn it over and make the other team frustrated with their speed and creativity, and not just to score goals, but just to keep the puck away and to have those great analytical numbers that are supposed to be the driving force for the success of this team. So I think you're right. They need to, as you say, diversify the portfolio, show they can win in different manners. And if they get the kind of goaltending, Ashley, they got last year from Freddie Anderson, mm-hmm. then all these things could correct themselves.
I want to talk about now the additions that Kyle Dubas made in the offseason. Which player do you know the most about? I know Kerfoot, he's been maybe one of the most consistent forwards so far, but I'm more interested in what you think of the additions of like a Mikheyev, the CC, the Barry trade. How have these, do we know who these guys are right now?
Well, I think we're learning. I think one thing, at least to me, I'd like to see Cody CC not be, you know, saddled with 20 something minutes per game of ice. I just think that's a lot to heap on him. I think that's a tall ask. And maybe now that Dermott's back and Muzzin's going to be playing back again, so maybe those numbers will go down. I think, you know, Mikheyev has been exceptional, better than a lot of us anticipated. He kind of came in as this unknown entity, and, you know, he's providing, you know, what amounts to a 60-point season. He's a plus player. He's done a lot of great things. He's been, on certain occasions, the Leafs' best player. So, you know, the early returns there have been great. I think we're still seeing, you know, I don't want to obviously judge Tyson Barry. If you look at his whole body of work, yeah, he's struggled. It's 15 games in. He hasn't scored yet. He's been a minus player. He's had some tough nights. But it's 15 games in, you know, a new system, new team. he's shuffled up with his defensive partners. We're going to learn more about what, you know, Tyson Berry's about. We already know what he's about, and I'm sure he's going to have a much better next 65 games than the first 15. But yeah, little by little, we're learning some things. Jason Spezza, that was a huge shootout goal for him. I'd like to think this is a guy that maybe is going to gain more trust from Mike Babcock and is going to be able to be there as that sort of stabilizing veteran presence that, is gone now. Marlowe's gone and Hainsey's gone. And a lot of the older players are gone. Even Kadri, you know, he wasn't necessarily a leader in every respect, but he was sort of a guy they leaned on at certain situations. So you'd like to think Jason Spezza is going to get a bit more of a run. That's part of the equation, Ziggy. They added so many players, right? And you've been on teams, I imagine, where you walk into the dressing room in September and you go, wow, I don't know half these guys. And that's got to take some time. And I imagine that's part of the process here is that it's 15 games in, and you'd like to think the familiarity with this group is growing on a day-to-day basis. And again, maybe Austin Matthews is right. That road trip will really do them wonders because they can really buckle down and be together as a team. You always hear Don Cherry say that. That's a helpful thing because there's so many other distractions when you're at home, family-wise, et cetera, getting tickets for friends and all the rest. On the road, you're just your team. So maybe that'll be a really good, turning point for them when they go out together on this extended road trip, 8 to 9 games after this week.
David, there's a reason that there are grown-ups surrounding me on this show. They remember the day of the week. So we'll call you next Tuesday. Thank you.
All right. We will see you then. Take care.
David Amber of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. The phone lines are open, 416-870-0590. We'll play Rock and Talk to get you a pair of tickets to the Hyundai James Naismith Classic on November 16th. And to put you into the draw to see the Leafs host the Flyers on Saturday night. Rock and Talk next.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Leadoff presents Rock and Talk.
This is for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Hyundai James Naismith Classic presented by City on November 16th, the College Basketball Showcase, and for your chance to enter the draw to see the Leafs host the Flyers on Saturday night. We'll make that draw at about 8 o'clock on Friday morning. We are playing Rock and Talk, and before we welcome our first caller to the program, Mon, fire it up.
This hit, that ice cold, Michelle Pfeiffer, that white gold. This one for them. Hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces, styling, willing, living it up in the city. Got Chucks on with Saint Laurent. Got to kiss myself. I'm so pretty.
Liz in Mississauga, tell us you have not been Shazamming over the last 10 seconds.
Believe that's Uptown Funk.
By?
Mark Ronson featuring Bruno Mars.
Don't believe me, just watch.
Congratulations, Liz.
Thank you.
You and your incredibly quick thumbs typing into Google there win a pair of tickets to see the Hyundai James Naismith Classic presented by City on November 16th. You're also into the draw, which we will make it about 8 o'clock Eastern on Friday morning for a chance to see the Leafs host the Flyers on Saturday night down at Scotiabank Arena.
Congratulations, Liz.
How do you guys know if they Google or not?
It just
the time
featuring
the time? Sure?
The, 1,000% the time, and just there's a way that you're thinking when you're
talking
through it for yourself, or just waiting for a search result to populate.
Sometimes you just got to dig for it, though. It takes a little time to get
to Google?
It.
Yeah, on Google.
It's what phones are for. Muggsy Bogues is next.
Get an extra large 2-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. That's an extra large 2-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. So remember, get wow! For only at Pizza Pizza.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley.
I am sorry, but I'm incredibly talented.
And humble.
Ziggy.
I like the people I work with generally. With four exceptions.
And Scotty Mack.
Here's the deal. I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence, and nobody can hang with my stuff. You ain't first, you're last.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Pete Jensen a little bit later on in the hour from NHL.com, and I think Ziggy wants to ask him, who's better, the Leafs or the Islanders? Dun, dun, dun.
Oh.
Under the bus. But we are pleased, very pleased, to kick this hour off with one of the great former Toronto Raptors. Muggsy Bogues is on the line, and he is partnering with GoDaddy, which today is launching a new marketing campaign which encourages entrepreneurs and small business owners across Canada to create an online presence for their venture. And this, of course, is tied to the Raptors' 25th anniversary. Muggsy, being a legendary Raptors alumnus, is launching a new storybook called A Raptor Tale. So he is here to discuss that, the state of the Raptors, spin you around the NBA as well. Muggsy, thanks so much for taking some time this morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Tell us about A Raptor Tale.
Well, A Raptor Tale was created through, with me and GoDaddy on our partnership, and it's such a perfect timing with the Raptors being, you know, the 2019 champion today. So it's such a great timing for us, and I'm just so thankful to partner with them. You know, over the years, I've been reading bedtime stories to my kids as well as my grandkids, and it's always been one of my favorite pastimes. So I hope all the Canadians across the country, you know, get a kick out of A Raptor. You know, it's just such a great opportunity for us to launch this book.
And the Raptors season last year, that had a really happy ending. What was it like to kind of be around the team and watch what those guys went through in order to get to the pinnacle of the NBA?
Oh, it was a blessing watching them accomplish their goals. I mean, as you say, it was in the makings for 25 years. And Masai and Mr. Tannenbaum, they had a plan, and they stuck with it. And to see it all come to a fruition, and them celebrating having 2 million people, you know, celebrating downtown with the parade. I mean, it just showed the testament of the support that they truly, you know, endure.
Muggsy, when you played here, what was your sense of Toronto as an emerging basketball market? And now that the Raptors are NBA champions and you saw it yourself, 2.5 million people showing up on a beautiful June day for the parade to celebrate all this, what is your sense of where it's gotten to?
Well, you know, early on, you know, I think Toronto was just getting introduced to the game, to the NBA brand of basketball. And, you know, it's always been a hockey town, a hockey city. So I think it was kind of new for a lot of people. But Vince Carter really put that franchise on the map. And his presence and his doing his play here, I really think that he set the tone for a lot of Canadians to dream, to believe that they could be, you know, possibly an NBA player. And you can see the, you know, the results of it. You know, the fans never gave up, never let up, and never stopped supporting that franchise. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, they had the success that they did.
Now, when you were playing, it was more of a big man league, and now it's kind of getting a little bit towards smaller skilled players. Is how would Muggsy Bogues do in today's game?
Well, I think I fare well in today's game. As you just alluded to, it's kind of got become a small ball brand of basketball where they took the big man out of the game. So, you know, you can see the game change in that regard. But, you know, that's the trend of the NBA basketball. You know, whenever that big guy come across, you know, the Shaquille O'Neal, the Patrick Ewing, again, I'm quite sure that result and reflect right back to that old type of style of basketball.
I kind of want to go back to your time in Charlotte for a second. You were there from 88 to 97, and you guys ended up being one of the most popular teams in the NBA, along with Alonzo Mourning and Larry Johnson, but it's considered a smaller market. What was it like to be on a team that might have been on the outskirts of the general NBA chatter and then develop into a team that was in the postseason and in the conversation all the time?
Well, that was the building block, you know, and as you alluded to, we did have a small market, and normally free agents didn't come there, so we had to do it through the draft. But again, we had the support of the fans, and they had the patience with us. We was able to acquire some really talented players, as you just mentioned, Lonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson, Del Curry, and we started to put some wins on the board. And I think during that process and showing, you know, what we was capable of doing and how the city was continuing to support us, and again, the organization had a plan and understand what that plan was, allowed us to become the type of team, you know, that a lot of people start to love and become very and start to root for. So, and that also put us on the map because we were one of the expansion teams that just came into the league.
How difficult was it to go through those seasons where you guys weren't as successful and you were getting lottery picks, which again did bring you to a point where you could draft and develop, but not necessarily worrying about the fans having the patience with you, just as competitors not being okay with losing and having to deal with that more regularly than you would have liked?
Well, those were the growing pains. You know, that's part of the NBA, I'm assuming. You have to go through those type of pains to understand what winning is all about. And we had a mixture of young veteran players combined, so we was trying to find that chemistry and find that common goal. But once we were able to do so, we was able to get on that winning side. But again, we had to go through our little bumps and bruises and understand that it's a process, and we understood what that process was, and we saw it to the end of it.
With Muggsy Bogues on Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Muggsy, are you somebody who considers yourself one who has overcome? And I'm sure in all the interviews you've done, you know where I'm probably taking this. It's regarding your height. I would imagine that there were people who told you growing up you weren't going to reach the heights you achieved because of your height.
Well, yeah, I was told that every day, you know, because of my height. You know, no one thought that a guy my size could play the game of basketball. You know, they felt like the game was meant for big and taller players. But I believe if you had the ability to play the game, then you should be included in the game. And I always had that thought process, and that's one of the reasons why I partnered with a company like GoDaddy, because they have that same thought process of, you know, empower and entrepreneurs like myself, as well as small business owners, you know. So they created opportunities, you know, to put visibility on the online. So for that, it kind of made a good match for me, you know. As you just mentioned about the basketball scene, I had to tie in the GoDaddy because that's the type of partnership and relationship that, you know, that I've been faced with all my life. Number one, believing that someone is capable of doing something until it's actually been done. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm out here looking for partnerships that kind of relates to that, and GoDaddy fits that brand for me.
So you did the full deal, the full ride at Wake Forest through the mid-1980s. How did you become who you became on the court? How did you overcome?
Well, confidence. You know, it starts there. You got to believe in yourself. Without that, you know, it's not much will happen for you going forward. But the confidence within me, you know, didn't have to have anybody to motivate me. I was more self-motivated because I was out there trying to prove a point and to let everybody know that it is possible for someone to decide to play, as I said, considered as a big man's game. But it's always start with the mindset, you know, when one has that strong mindset, believe, you know, in themselves, you know, regardless of what anyone else believes, and it doesn't matter. You know, as long as you have the confidence within yourself, you can accomplish anything in life.
It's interesting because you do see a lot of underrated players or low draft picks in any sport, not just the NBA. And one of the common themes that we hear from the Muggsy is, listen, I have a chip on my shoulder. I was overlooked. Mm-hmm. I want to prove the doubters wrong. But that mentality kind of puts a big time pressure and I would imagine burden on the athlete who's saying that, because on the flip side, you can take the approach where I want to prove the people that were in my circle that believed in me, I want to prove them right as opposed to proving people wrong. Do you think this whole chip on my shoulder culture is as beneficial in terms of motivating as we take it?
Well, I think anyone who is being doubted may have a chip on the shoulder, regardless of what era or whenever that time may be. You know, if someone doubts you and someone don't give you the credit or believe in you, then you're going to have that chip on your shoulder. And guys will get overlooked in a draft of people who, you know, don't give them that type of attention. They will feel like they, you know, they have a chip on their shoulder because they feel like they have the skill set just like anyone else. And like a kid like Van Vliet, who got, you know, didn't get drafted and, you know, had the opportunity to come in, you know, he had a chip on his shoulder. He wanted to prove that he belonged. And, you know, that's how society works. But, you know, that goes with that individual believing in themselves, understanding where they are and what they have to offer, and not wavering, not believing in what anyone who think they're an expert in their lives.
So at what point did you feel like you didn't have anything left to prove?
Well, I always felt like I always had something to prove, just to me personally, you know, because I wanted to let folks know that, you know, that this game is meant for whoever had the ability to play the game of basketball. My era, and during that time, it was always big guards, and a lot of coaches believed in that. So, you know, I always carried that all the way through. I felt I needed to have that chip and that understanding thought process for me to reach the pinnacle that I was chasing.
Muggsy Bogues is our guest. This is Leadoff with Ashley, Siggy, and Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
With everything you've accomplished in your career, are there any players that reach out to you for either advice, or are you a mentor with any players in the league right now or in the last past couple of years?
Well, you know, back in the day, I was mentoring Earl Borgens and, you know, Isaiah Thomas and Nate Robinson when those guys came in. You know, I speak with them frequently. Guys do have reached out. You know, the Chris Pauls and all of them, when they first came to the league, kind of shared your thoughts and gave them the understanding how to be a pro on and off the court. So I had my opportunity to kind of mentor some of the players.
Muggsy, I apologize if this is a silly question. I just haven't heard you answer or read it anywhere. How did you get your nickname?
How did I get my nickname? Well, growing up in the city of Baltimore, I don't know if you guys remember a show called The Bowery Boys. One of the character names was Muggsy. And Muggsy was the smallest guy, of course, of his crew, and I was the smallest of my crew growing up in the city of Baltimore. And I guess they tied the TV shows with the way I was playing the game of basketball. They say I was mugging everybody. And mugging became Muggsy, and which I used to hate, and but it kind of grew on me.
That's what I thought it was, because you're just picking everyone's pocket, a little thief out there. That's a good – I mean, I've heard – listen, Muggsy, I've heard worse.
yes.
You count your blessings with that one. I've heard much, much worse. I do want to get to the current iteration of the Raptors team for a second. You mentioned Fred VanVleet. He's being put in a new position, a starting role. Someone like Pascal Siakam expected to take another big step, even though he's already exceeded expectations. And then Kyle Lowry leading the way and defying time, seemingly, even though he likes to take charges, which don't seem like they're good for the old back there. But what do you make of the group that the Raptors are putting out on the court on a nightly basis this year?
I mean, very competitive group. I mean, they have just as good of a chance as anyone. I mean, the East is not that strong. You know, they're coming off again, you know, being the defending champs. So they got a little swagger with themselves, even though they lost Kawhi. They still believe that they're just as good as anyone in the East, and possibly anything can happen. You know, luck happened last year where I don't want to just put it on the injuries, but it allowed, you know, Toronto an easy, you know, easy way in winning that championship. And, you know, so those things happen. But, you know, you just got to be proud of the guys and what they're doing now and what Coach Nurse is continuing to get those guys to play on a nightly basis. So anything is possible, and we'll wait and see what happens at, you know, the end of March and April.
Hold on, my friend. Are you saying that you agree with Kevin Durant's theory that had he not have gone down, that the Warriors would be the champions this year?
Well, I'm not going to agree with Kevin Durant.
Not
I'm
on a Toronto radio station.
Yeah, I would definitely not agree with Kevin Durant. I'm just going to make my basketball assessment in terms of, you know, the power that they had in terms of Steph and Clay and Durant. And it would, like I said, I'm not saying they wouldn't have won still, but they made it a lot easier for them to get to the chip.
Okay, that's fine. I'll allow it, Muggsy.
We'll still read the storybook, Muggsy. It's okay.
You're still the rat tail, you know.
I will read the rat tail, yes, I promise.
Yeah, you still can go get it at rattail.ca.
We absolutely will. Listen, we so much appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for this, and we'll send you a book review. We'll be reading it very soon. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
You bet. Muggsy Bogues, a former NBAer, former Raptor, and he is the spokesperson for this year's GoDaddy campaign, and he has launched a new Raptors-centric storybook, A Raptor Tale, and all of the proceeds from sales of A Raptor Tale will go to the MLSE Foundation. 5'3". And if you're a short basketball player, you're getting a nickname, right? Like Muggsy Bogues, Spud Webb.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Spud Webb?
Mm-hmm. But usually the thing about shorter guys is generally their nicknames are ironic, right? And like you have big guys who are named like Little This or whatever, right? And then like a smaller guy. But like Spud is very specific. Like, did you look like a potato?
Yeah.
Are you rolling around
you're
out
very
there?
Small.
Muggsy's, I would say that's a good nickname. It speaks to a very specific skill set. It's a positive thing to have in basketball.
He pickpocket you.
Yeah.
But those, his name and, I mean, Muggsy Bogues, he's, when you talk about, if you're not a basketball fan, you know who it's like the Michael Jordans, the Larry Birds. It's just like.
They're Muggsy, the stars.
But then if you had to ask a non-basketball fan, they would know who that is.
Yes.
Because he's almost a first. He's a pioneer, right? He's someone that, again, he mentioned it. No one thought you can be in the NBA when you're a short guy. Because what's it all about? It's about high flying. It's about dunks. It's about blocks. It's about being super physical. So how do you navigate that landscape? So you're always going to remember the pioneers. You're always going to remember the firsts, to your point. Space Jam didn't hurt.
No.
Either.
No.
He's already a star.
He was already a star. Long before that. Leafs and Kings tonight. It's a Kings week in Toronto. Los Angeles is here to play the Leafs. And then the Sacramento Kings are coming in tomorrow night. And Ashley, you're going to head down to King's Pracky and get, I shouldn't be using that. That's a hockey
that.
Term.
Why'd you
practice.
Say that?
Yeah, that's a hockey term.
That is you such even, a hockey. I haven't even
said
when
you,
that.
Even
oh my
using
gosh.
It around hockey is highly
you know what?
Egregious.
That's what they use in Ottawa.
Pracky?
Oh.
Terrible.
What are you, diving me back 10 years?
Down in the valley.
I can't remember where, yeah. Hugh Burrell and me.
I know, where's
Hugh? Hey, Hugh, who's going to Pracky today,
he's
Hugh?
He's going to come in with his flannel and be like, what's the problem with the Valley?
It's going to be like the second or third iteration of Flannel Fury this morning. Hugh just barging in head first.
I have some things to say. I don't even know what the Valley's about. I just know it's a trigger for him, so I like to throw it in there
once absolutely.
In a while.
Well.
Oh, I think I'm surprised Hugh's not in here. Come in.
Yet. Oh, here we go. Sit down.
Well,
sit down.
Hugh, I have not seen you move this fast in years, buddy.
Hugh?
Ashley, I've never moved this fast.
Hugh.
Again, the shots that are being taken here. I have never used the term pracky.
Because you're a professional.
Well.
Publicly facing.
Hugh, yes. Let's rank Ottawa Valley towns from best to worst.
Well,
you'll never be allowed to go home again. Arnprior, Renfrew, Chalk River, Deep River.
Stittsville?
I hated Arnprior and Renfrew
a suburb.
Because we played them in football.
Uh-huh.
So they're lifelong enemies, the Arnprior.
Are you Deep River? Is that or
yeah,
Chalk River?
Born in Pembroke, raised in Chalk River, went to school in Deep River, which are like four miles apart.
All these things
apart.
Sound like lies.
Yeah.
Chalk River,
sound,
Deep
they,
River,
they
Long
up,
River,
they?
Wide
yeah.
River. Like,
yeah,
what?
A lot of rivers. A lot of rivers.
It's a watery area.
Yeah, so...
So you hate the Prior, as they call it, and you don't like Renfrew.
Well, my very, very first job out of college was in Renfrew. So I kind of have a bit of an affinity for Renfrew. But I hated their football team. The Raiders couldn't stand them.
You were a fullback, too. I love that.
Yeah, well, I was too slow and dumb to do anything else.
Old school.
But well, you're in the right room. Here I am in radio. Wow.
And now you're the smartest person in this room. Congratulations.
It's all coming together. Anyway, I've never said pracky. I didn't even know what that meant.
Yeah, you did.
I don't know where I started to hear that a few years ago.
Scotty said it first. Yeah. Just
and hopefully we'll never say it again.
You've never used that term?
Disgusting.
The guys do use it. The guys do use it in the room.
But do they use it ironically? Like, hey, bud, do you want to see you at pracky?
No, it's like legit. It's the hey, we got pracky tomorrow. Like, it's part of the vocab.
It's the bro culture.
Yeah.
Big time.
And I did not say pracky.
You're not saving any syllables once. There, though. So why would you, pracky? Why would you contract it?
That would mean that people are thinking logically about this.
Here we are in radio.
Here we go. Congrats Ziggy, on living in the valley.
Ziggy used to ride his bikey to practice.
I got a goey.
Yeah. He was like, you know what? If I stay here any longer, this stink is going to attach to me.
But yes, practice for the Kings. I hope to talk to Roy Rana. I hope to talk to Corey Joseph back in town.
So when you enter...
Who else is there?
How does it work with basketball players? Do they like... Do they go lower and everyone kind of like, how do you get in for like like when you're interviewing guys, aren't they so much bigger than the media when you go up? And so is it just like you put it on like one of those selfie sticks and send up your
you kind of just hope that your shoulder strength is good that day and hold your arm up. Sometimes if their practice is a bit weird because it's not as structured with media avail, when the guys come off the court, you kind of just like go get them. Like, you are like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? They're taking off their shoes. They're putting on their sweaters to get on the bus to go. It's kind of a free-for-all. So, it can be a bit talking to chest level sometimes.
Well, I think Sacramento is probably pretty agreeable, right? Because it's not like seven beat reporters are coming from Sacramento, California to cover the team. So
yeah, so it should be pretty good access.
Solid availability, and we may run some tape on tomorrow morning's
come
program.
Back. I got no quotes.
Yeah. So, and Ashley,
I got no quotes and a sore shoulder.
Yeah. Here's what I think they were thinking.
So, Ashley, let's run that tape from practice. Oh, geez.
It's
dead air.
It's just rock and talk with Ziggy.
Just rock and talk.
Here's what he said about going out in Toronto.
Best of rock and talk with Ziggy. Uptown funk. You could win one of 50 $500 prize packs and qualify for a grand prize sports weekend getaway, including tickets to see both Toronto teams back-to-back with the VTech wake-up call. Give us a call at 416-413-4141. Leave us your best Toronto sports take and give us a little more than, hi, I'm Sally, or hi, I'm Jim, and I love Toronto, and then hang up. You got to give us more than that. Give us your best Toronto sports take. Set your alarms every Friday morning at 8:20, and that's when we will award the VTech wake-up call. You can visit sportsnet.ca/590 for details. Pete Jensen of NHL.com. The Islanders are on a heater, 9 in a row, and they got the Senators, who thumped the Rangers last night, coming onto Long Island or Brooklyn or wherever the hell it is they're playing tonight, on a back-to-back, looking for 10. Are the Islanders better than the Leafs? It's Hot Take Time with Pete Jensen next.
Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Bringing this on air because I've been noticing it the whole time,
the whole
time.
And we're both the worst because we didn't say a damn thing.
Ziggy, your poppy was, the black part of your poppy was a little out of alignment.
It was like elevated and levitating.
At least I have one on. The amount of people I pass in the subway without, and they're commuting to work, they don't put one on.
I'm telling you. Half of those people have lost theirs because it's fallen off their jacket.
When you're in the subway system, they're selling them for donate. They have the donation box every 20 feet in every stop. Put on a poppy. I will say,
listen, I don't want any blowback from this. I'm a poppy lover, okay?
She's wearing one.
A big supporter. However, It is 2019. I don't know if this is blasphemous, but there has to be a way to fasten these things. That we, like, come on.
No, I know.
We have shoes that do up by themselves like we are Marty McFly, and we don't have some kind of securing device for a poppy. Like, it can't be on a safety pin. It's just on a pin that makes you bleed and then you lose it.
It's a good point.
You know, it just hurts you and then it abandons you, like all of my exes. And I still wear poppies in spite of that, even though it brings me back to some dark places. That's all I'm saying, is that there should be a way to just fasten it a little bit more.
That took a turn.
That's a good
You're starting to well
turn.
Up here. I feel
oh my
almost.
Gosh.
Is that sympathy I feel? Pete Jensen's on the line right now going.
Pete knows what's
okay,
up.
Okay, so he's thinking to himself, I could hang up the phone right now and claim static or that I went into a tunnel.
Yeah.
Or whatever. He is from NHL.com and he is the host of NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. And that's up 3 to 4 times a week on NHL.com. Pete, do you still want to do this interview? After everything you've heard?
Yes, I'm willing to give you guys a couple more minutes to redeem yourselves. But no, it's a pleasure to be on with you this morning.
Good to hear your voice. I'm going to steal Ziggy's question because I don't think he's going to ask it. So I'll just be that guy. We have, you may be aware, Pete, a bit of an obsession with our local hockey team. And we worry a little bit about how they're playing. And we compare them sometimes to other teams. Boston is often at the top of the list, what with the playoffs and such. But Lou Lamoriello is running a New York Islanders team that has won 9 in a row and is poised to win its 10th, facing an Ottawa team that's on a back-to-back tonight in Brooklyn. If you were putting those two teams up against each other, papered rosters, who do you like better and which teams style of play do you prefer?
I mean, I like the talent of the Maple Leafs hands down, but the structure of Barry Trotz and this goaltending tandem, it's amazing too. They can swap out Robin Leonard like it's nothing and take on a reclamation project like Semyon Varlamov, and he's performing just as well. And with Thomas Greiss as well. I mean, I think right now if the two teams played, the Islanders would win. I know that the Islanders had some success against the Maple Leafs, to everyone's surprise, last year. I still think the Maple Leafs are going to be a dangerous team come playoff time, but with the way Boston's playing, if they come head-to-head again, you got to be worried as a Maple Leafs fan right now. The Maple Leafs are near the bottom of the league in even strength save percentage, near the top of the league for the wrong reasons in allowing the 6th most shots per game, shots on goal. So that's the type of lack of structure and the type of things that worry you over the course of a long regular season. Even if Frederik Andersen plays well on a given night, it doesn't guarantee you anything. And that's a problem right now for the Maple Leafs, especially while they're without Tavares and Zach Hyman and guys like that.
Now, I want to ask you about the Leafs in a little bit, but just one more thing about the Islanders. Now, we had Lou Lamoriello here with the Maple Leafs. How much credit do you give him for the Islanders kind of turning it around with that organization?
Oh, it's all the credit in the world to the two of those guys. I still can't believe, honestly, that after, you know, with Tavares possibly leaving at that time, that they were able to get Barry Trotz fresh off a Stanley Cup championship. That sort of stuff doesn't happen in any major sports where a coach of a champion leaves. And I think that that would not have ever happened in a million years if Lou Lamoriello wasn't at the helm for Trotz to go there, even if it was for more money. It still just speaks volumes about Lou. And then just with all the Islanders fans the past year and a half since Tavares, even when they lost Tavares, it was like the urgency to make a trade, you know, trigger happy move. And he has just had a cool demeanor. He stuck with his guys. He saw who worked out last year. He was able to re-sign guys who were about to hit the free agent market, whether it was Brock Nelson, Jordan Eberle, some of these guys. I know Leonard ended up leaving, but like I said, it didn't matter. I mean, it hasn't mattered so far. They're on the verge of a 10-game winning streak, And it's early November, so do the math, and they're near the top of the NHL standing. So I think Lamoriello has everything to do with this, and everybody who doubted him, you know, is turning their heads right now.
I'm sure you've seen the comments from Doughty and Ovechkin regarding the Toronto Maple Leafs. What did you make of that, and is that a big deal when you're looking at star players talking about other teams, or do you see kind of not that big of a deal?
I mean, regarding Doughty, he's been talking a lot. He said, you know, that team's not playing very well. That game tonight is going to be probably high scoring between the Kings and the Maple Leafs. The Kings have generated a lot of shots this year, but have not done well on their own end. So the Leafs have a great chance tonight. But regarding Ovechkin, I mean, he's a championship caliber player in the Maple Leafs and Toronto market are the most polarizing in the league, to say the least. And of course, after like what the Raptors did and just the pressure on the Maple Leafs, the pressure on Babcock, the pressure on their star power, you know, when you have three or four elite players in your lineup on a nightly basis, the expectations are tremendously high. So I think that the Ovechkin points are valid. The way that they play, needs to change to some extent. I don't know if they're going to make a trade or whatnot, but what's happening now is not really working so far. And, you know, the playoff failures the past couple of years, it's a shame that they ran into Boston again last year, losing game six at home. You know, you can't help but look back at that with some regret as this Maple Leafs team struggles to get out of the first round year to year.
Pete Jensen is with NHL.com. He's the fantasy hockey editor. You can get him on Twitter at NHL Jensen, and he's with us on Leadoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Pete, if you told me at the start of the season this year that when we're talking about potent offensive duos in the NHL, that we wouldn't necessarily have Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, William Nylander, or any grouping of those two at the top of our minds, I probably would have been a little bit surprised. But so far, the names are, I guess, predictable to a certain extent. You have Alexander Ovechkin and John Carlson who are making waves. Leon Draisaitl, mm-hmm. Connor McDavid have continued their impact from last season. And then forever, Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak. And you mentioned what a pain in the neck they've been to Toronto Maple Leafs and their fans. Mm-hmm. Those three tandems are kind of running away with things early on. Would you trade any of those two for like a Matthews Tavares, a Matthews Marner duo? Would you prefer to have them?
I mean, it's tough because I think that the way that the Maple Leafs have built their roster, having two elite centers, puts them more in a, you know, potential championship conversation with like Crosby, Malkin. I mean, that's what you're hoping for, to spread your scoring out onto two separate lines, which can make you more valuable over a long playoff run. I know it hasn't happened yet, but last year I felt like when the Maple Leafs had a chance to break through against the Bruins, if they had done so, I really felt strongly that they could have gone to the Cup final. Mm. So that's the type of ceiling that you're talking about with Matthews and Tavares on separate lines, and then also having Marner playing with Tavares. So, but yeah, those couple of duos that you mentioned, it's pretty amazing. Nobody really talks about Brad Marchand, even with Pastrnak's success so far leading the league in goals. But Brad Marchand right now, last check, 28 points in 14 games. That's 2 points per game right now.
It's not too shabby,
that
Pete.
Spicy guy. That's pretty amazing.
And that's more infuriating, too, because he already rubs people the wrong way. So not only is he going to do it to you mentally, he's going to do it on the score sheet, too, which is one of the things that we talk about all the time. It's not enough for the Maple Leafs to just be like, we need an enforcer. We need someone who's an irritant. We need someone who's going to really get under people's skin. You have to be also talented in this NHL.
Yeah, for sure. And they're going to get some grind back when Zach Hyman comes back. But you know, I know a lot of people think that Zach Hyman shouldn't be playing in the top six. Maybe it should be someone like Mikhaev or Kapanen, and that's a fair point as well. But I think bringing that type of demeanor back into the lineup will be invaluable for this team. And I'm also curious to see if the Maple Leafs might consider, when they get back fully healthy, to try Tyson Barrie more on the first power play unit to take some pressure off some of the other defensemen and try to cater to his skill set. I think that's something that has been a little surprising so far early in the season to see Barry, who's a great offensive defenseman, on the second power play.
Pete, great chat this morning. Thank you. We'll certainly reach out again soon.
Sounds great, and thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. Hope the Leafs start to turn things around for your city.
No, you don't. You just laughed at the end of that. Thanks for sticking with us despite me being around, though, Pete, also.
Well, Pete's like, okay, so who's buying me free drinks next time I'm in Toronto? I said something nice about the Leafs.
Everyone.
Yeah, everybody. Everybody. Yeah. Pete Jensen of NHL.com, the fantasy hockey editor, and he 3 to 4 times a week is the host of the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast, which you can get on NHL.com. Want to see the Leafs play in Florida? We'll tell you how.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This hit, that ice cold Michelle Pfeiffer, that white gold. This one for them hood girls. Them good girls, straight masterpieces. Styling, willing, living it up in the city. Got Chucks on with Saint Laurent. Gotta kiss myself. I'm so pretty. I'm too hot. Call the police and the fireman. I'm too hot.
Make a dragon wanna retire, man. I'm too hot. If you play for the University of Toronto men's hockey team, that's your assistant coach. That's all I'm gonna say.
They do listen. Hallelujah. When they're studying, they do. The guys do tune in.
Good.
Well, they just all started vomiting because that was grotesque, egregious.
Ryan Mon, somehow get the players' emails, send that clip.
And to be clear, actually, you can just go on their website and their head coach's email is there. You can just go ahead and send that right to the head coach.
Yeah, you can do that too.
And the kiss on the end of it was also his as well. I will say. Every day we have to sit here and watch him look in a mirror and fix his hair and fix his poppy and check his collar and make sure he's on point. It's the vanity levels really are through the roof.
I appreciate your concern for my appearances. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
What? We're not concerned. It's selfish. We don't have to look at you.
Actually,
you don't have to look at yourself.
It was our neuroses were being affected by the fact that your poppy.
Yeah, if our listeners want to know what it's like in here for me, my poppy black middle piece was off by 3.5 millimeters.
It's actually started again.
And I get in trouble for it. So you can just imagine what the rest of my day is like in here.
Oh, here we go. Slandering us on our own show now. Before it was on Tim and Sid. All they do is sleep all day. Now all we do is give you a hard time day in and day out. This is ridiculous. This is a team environment. It's very inclusive. And I dare you to say something else.
Just fix your poppy and we'll shut up. That's really it.
It's fine right now.
Now
I'm going to be looking at it all day. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you, and I'm talking to you, how would you like to fly on board the Air Canada fan flight to see the Maple Leafs play in Florida in January? Stay tuned during Good Show or go to sportsnet.ca/590 for details. I would like to be involved. I would like to go to Florida in January and watch a hockey game and lie on the beach.
It's sneaky cold. It depends on where you are.
Florida. We love Florida.
But you're far enough south, like Miami, Sunrise, Lauderdale, it's okay. It's Tampa can get iffy in January.
Even Miami, there's a week or two in January, it can get cold.
What were you in Miami for?
I was doing the marathon, you know, just casually in South Florida.
Yeah, just like casually South Florida, a little bit of Salt Lake City mixed in, the Grand Canyon.
Did you win your marathon?
I think I finished in the top 4,000 or 5,000 out of 25,000. So that was decent.
I thought you were going to say 4 or 5. I was like, wow, that's so good. I was ready to keep praises. It's like 1,000.
Yeah, my running looks about as good as my hockey stride. So I'm not finishing anywhere near the top. Looks
that's
about-
still impressive, though, all jokes aside. Like, I would never attempt a marathon. No. Sounds terrible. Like, no. You know, you can stop, right?
Well, we should do the 5K one day. We've talked about that.
Yeah, tomorrow. I'm good.
I'm going to have to think about that before I commit to it. We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good show coming up.
It was great radio. You guys did. That was great radio, man. I know something about radio. That was great radio.